Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Fugees concert started 3 hours late. Can't say we didn't see that coming. Microsoft announced new Surface devices, and they all sound kind of awesome. Google security escorts a black employee with a badge off campus because someone didn't believe he was an actual employee. And the conditions some food delivery contractors work under in big cities like New York aren't just miserable, they're downright dangerous. We've got all this and just a little bit more in this episode of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And it's your girl, Tech Life Steph from Philly.
And from the suburbs of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech.
So, y'all, we on episode, what is this, episode 3?
Yeah, it's, that zero thing you did mess me up.
I know, the zero thing messed us up. So, for the OGs, the ones who have been listening since the beginning of the month or last month, because all these shows literally have gone up in the last couple of weeks. Zero was what we did for DTNS experiment week. And then we officially started with episode 1, 2 was last week. So this is 3. So all we're right. Just going to start counting from here. I know this is actually the 4th show, but we're just going to call it 3 and keep it pushing. But anyway, how was y'all's weeks?
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. Trying to figure out, and I already know the answer, but trying to figure out if I'm going to cop some Fugees tickets. But based on the news, you might.
Do not
might,
do it.
Yeah, I might want to hold back on that because it seems like.
I can't.
So they already had a show in New York, I think it was.
Yes. Yeah, it was a pop-up show in New York.
Right. And they already showed, according to the stories that I read, of course, I guess par for the course, they showed up mad late, started 3 hours after the show.
That
so
is so disrespectful, man.
But,
sorry, it just is.
But somebody I shared it on Facebook, and somebody I know who is a in the industry, he's not a celebrity or artist or anything like that, but he's connected, and he brought up a good point with this first New York show. He made the point that said, okay, well, doors probably opened at 7 o'clock. Let's just say 7 because I don't remember the actual time.
It was supposed to be seven.
Doors opened at 7. And he said it's highly unlikely for a act or an artist to actually play when the doors open.
Now, of course, I know that. But 3 hours later, though, it was like on a Wednesday, so it was during the week.
And we all know who was late. It wasn't all three Fugees; it was probably late. There was one.
It was probably one in particular.
One Ms. Lauryn Hill, who is an awesome artist, but she is notorious for showing up late to the point to where they actually put things in her contracts with venues for where she does stuff. Mm-hmm. So
it's ridiculous.
It's hard to give the benefit of the doubt.
You had to stand the whole time.
Right.
And now you're on your feet. And like I said, the Fugees core audience are probably Gen Xers. So they ain't young. You know what I mean? They got things to do. They got to pick up kids.
Right.
just disrespectful. Don't do that to your fans, man.
I was hoping because it's like, okay, If the first like 5 or 6 go good, it might be I can go to this city and see it here.
Right. And they said not only were they 3 hours late, they performed for less than an hour.
Yes.
So you only doing 45 minutes.
And, but I've been here for 4 hours.
And I've been here for 4 hours. Yeah, that's going to be a no for me, dog.
Right. So all that to say, the Fugees are coming to Atlanta. And that, like Stephanie said, it's probably going to be, I'm going to have to pass on this one.
No, I don't have that kind of time to mm-mm. wait. Mm-mm. For
and here's even coming to Philly, so I don't care.
But you know what? If you go to this concert at this point with all that is known, you can't be upset. You have to know. You have to expect that. Okay, it starts at 7. It really ain't starting until 9:30, 10. You just kind of have to know that this is cool. This group is and has been for decades.
So, I have my co-host on my other podcast, Snob OS. Check him out. She is a concert person. So she's got like a little concert crew, quote unquote. And, you know, they go to all the Beyoncé's, all of the, you know, the high end shows, you know, if it's somebody who's, you know, they want to go, they'll go see them. Right. She went to Lauryn Hill's concert when she was doing solo here in Atlanta. And she had the same problem. It was a mess. Showed up late. The venue had a strict, we have to end by this time. Right. She didn't show up until 5 minutes until. And then they cut the mics. They cut the mics because in this neighborhood, there's some rich white folks in this area and they don't play that. So, but what she said was other cities, they got this awesome, great performance. They loved it. Everything went smooth. It was the concert you would assume that she would put on. So it's almost like you're rolling the dice to where
the thing, especially with her, you never know what you're going to get on any given night. You know, you may get the concert of a lifetime or nothing, like literally nothing. And it's just like concerts cost too much money.
Yes,
you know,
they do. Too much time.
You're probably going to dinner beforehand. Mm-hmm. So this is an evening out, you know, an experience you're trying to create when you don't know, you got a 50-50 chance of it going really, really well or going completely south. And that's just too much, you know, those aren't good odds for me.
No.
Those are not good enough odds for me.
And then like, I was listening to some of the commentary and looking at a lot of the tweets and the Facebook and Instagram messages. And it was like, they even said that like Wyclef and Praz, they just kind of looked almost disinterested in the whole thing. So it's just like anybody who is a Fugees fan, you know, that there's drama with this group. It is awesome music. It is awesome music, but
I still got that CD somewhere. I can listen to it at the house.
Attend at your own risk. But this is a tech show, so we probably should talk about some tech at some point in this show. So I know y'all are, you know, Terrence, you are the Apple guru of the group. But there is another operating system out there called Windows that I tend to partake in. So Surface, or I should say Microsoft, they announced some new Surface devices. Either of you take any peekings into what was going on with the Microsoft announcement?
I saw it just enough to root on my homeboy, Scott Hanselman. I saw him doing a presentation for their, is it the Laptop Studio? Which one is the big one? The big that they actually do the developing on and all that good stuff.
I think that is the studio.
Surface Laptop Studio.
Okay, and so I tuned in to see my homeboy Scott Hanselman do his presentation, and then I bounced out.
So
I'll be honest. Go ahead.
So yeah, that one is the big daddy. So the Laptop Studio runs an 11th Gen I Intel Core H35 processor and an NVIDIA GeForce RTX GPU. So theoretically, this thing should be able to handle immense amounts of work. And I hope so, because it's expensive. It is not for the faint of heart. It is a premium laptop. But they also announced other Surface devices. Let me just start here. At the low end, you've got the Surface Go 3. I personally am not a huge fan of the Surface, not because of any lacking in the device itself. It's just that it's not lappable, meaning that it is a tablet. It's got this click-on keyboard. Right. And the way that I use my laptops, it is not uncommon for me to just grab the laptop by the keyboard base or by the base of the laptop and walk around with it. You can't really do that as easily with a Surface. Now, I know that the thing clicks and folds up very quickly, and when you open it up, it is instantaneously on. It is just not for me. That being said, my wife and my daughter have them, and they absolutely love them. So was interested to see the Surface 3, come out, just because we have, I believe, the original Surface Go, which is getting a little bit long in the tooth. Microsoft also announced a Surface Pro 8 and a Surface Duo 2. The Surface Pro 8 basically is just a newer version of the Surface. They upgraded the specs in that a little bit. There's a Surface Pro X, didn't receive too much of an update, but they lowered the price on it. And then the one thing that you would think that I would be interested in it because I'm so into Android is the Surface Duo 2. I don't know if you guys have checked that out.
That's the tablet with the two screens.
Yeah. Looks like the Z Fold, the Galaxy Z Fold.
So it's a little different. The Z Fold is one screen. When you unfold that thing, it is one giant screen. This is like a book. You open it up and there's two physical screens that you're using. And I've been saying this since the original Surface Duo. It seems to me like it is a device looking for a business critical issue. I don't know what this solves at this price, because it is not inexpensive. This thing starts at $1,500.
Not at the price, but I can see now with all of our telecommuting, well, all of our mobile productivity that was not there with the Surface Book, I think it's what the original one was called. I could see now there being a somewhat of a use case to where if you're on the go and you are joining a team, Microsoft Teams, because Microsoft Teams wasn't there with the older devices, to where with Teams, you can actually join a call, watch video, and actually join the whiteboard where you pull out the little the stylus and actually draw on the whiteboard, mark up a PDF, whatever the case may be. Again, why wouldn't you do that on a Surface device? You know, if you've just got this Surface Duo 2 and you're on a quick call and you need to scribble up something, I can see those two screens coming in handy because, again, like I mentioned, we're all mobile now, more so than before when it first came out.
I didn't pay a ton of attention to this, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I've always appreciated how, you know, kind of high end Surfaces are. Considering their tablets, they always get spoken of in the same breath as laptops. When you're talking about what's the best laptop, the Surface is typically in that mix as well. But I was watching a little bit of HSN, actually, Home Shopping Network, because they debuted an HP laptop with Windows 11. And that had some really interesting new upgrades and features. So I'll be curious. I think they had sort of an advance. I don't think Windows 11 is actually out yet throughout the country or globally or anything, but they were calling it an advance or we have the first look at Windows 11. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of hype that gets.
There's one feature of the Surface laptop studio that I really like. I've had the 2-in-1s because it's kind of like, well, why not get it with a touchscreen and be able to flip it over and use it as a tablet? I don't really use laptops that way all that often, but it is kind of a nice feature. But the thing that I've always kind of just didn't like about the 2-in-1s is that when you flip the screen over and you're holding it as a tablet, you can still feel the keys on the bottom. Now the keyboard is disabled and you can't really do anything with hitting the buttons.
What is it though? And does it disable quickly? And I might be just biased from like HP products, but I know even just that act of flipping, sort of you kind of engage some keys and now you done press the button you didn't want to press, and you know, and then that process of engaging it back to sort of laptop format like that. I don't like that.
Okay, so it's not just me. I'm not a fan. It just doesn't feel good. It's like I'm holding it. It's like I could, you know, I'm very easily distracted. So I just want to start playing with the buttons. But this new laptop studio, the way the screen hinges is that it literally like hinges in multiple. You almost have to see a video of it to kind of understand it. But when you actually put it into laptop mode, the screen actually folds over top of the keyboard. So what you end up having is a ridiculously heavy actual tablet. You know, it truly is a tablet in this sense because
covers the screen.
So
it covers the keyboard.
Yes, the screen actually covers the keyboard.
But the reason why they call it studio is because it doesn't lay flat. There still is an angle to the screen when you fold it on the keyboard. From what I could tell from the video that I saw, it doesn't completely lay flat. So it couldn't lay flat and then I hold it like I'm reading something or whatever. It actually does have a little bit of an angle. If you can see my hand there. A little bit of an angle to where it does have a display angle to where you're actually looking at it, to where you can then pull out the stylus and do whatever the case may be. But it doesn't lay perfectly flat. Quote me if I'm wrong.
That would mess with my OCD.
Yeah, it's
it really would.
For me though, that works better because once again, this is not like you can be walking around with an iPad. It's heavy. It is not a light device. So the chances that you're going to actually just be walking around like it's a, you know, like a tablet, like you would with a tablet, where you just have it in your hand, you put it on your arm. I don't really think you're going to be doing this with that the type of device. So I don't mind that just because it does give you those additional angles. And I could see if you were an artist and you were drawing on the screen, you know, giving you those additional angles when you. You know, you could just very easily push, you know, the screen back and your keyboard's right there without having to pick the whole thing up and flip it over. It was just kind of an interesting use case. But anyway, I don't know if any of these devices are for me. I really do like the Surface Pro 8 from a spec standpoint what I would say is a upper low end range or a lower mid range type laptop, which generally can do pretty much anything less game. But it's just that because it's not terribly lappable, you know, it changes that use case for me. That's what, you know, keeps me from wanting to get one. But the specs in these are pretty nice. And, like I said, on this studio, I really want to see how this thing handles, you know, rendering 4K, 6K, 8K video, because that's what I would use it for. If I were going to get something like that, it would be a workhorse, type machine. So anyway, like I said, Microsoft, I still think that even though your boy Scott had a nice, he had a pep in the step. He actually was doing what he could do. Microsoft really needs to pay attention to Apple and how they do their launch events. It just bite. Just take some of their ideas and just do it, because it's like it's hard to watch. I don't want to say it's hard. It's very, very well produced, but it's just not exciting to watch it.
That was like last week sometime, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember because I actually had it on and was trying to watch, but just got so disinterested. I mean, you know, my bad, Microsoft. Yeah, holler at your girl. I come up there and, you know, got to answer something for you. But I did. I had it on kind of in the background. I usually do with launches. And it just didn't. Like you said, grab my attention, and it was on, but I was not paying attention to it at all. It literally just sat on my, you know, my second screen on my desktop and ran and streamed, and I didn't, and I was doing work on my other screen and just didn't even regard it, basically, because it just wasn't engaging enough.
Apple gives you butterflies and bubbles right at that moment that you're about to tune out that catches your attention again. That's what Microsoft needs to bite. They need to just.
Well, they need better storytelling. Yeah, you know, so. That's all. It's just like storytelling and presentation. So, yeah.
But everything can't be.
Now I remembered. I was like, I was watching that. I totally didn't finish watching it.
Yeah, so it's their events. They're always like that. The stuff is top notch. I mean, these Surface devices will probably be some of the best laptops out. But it's just not you know, it's just not a terribly entertaining watch. But since we've already started talking a little bit about Apple, let's talk about some things that, you know, Tim Cook says that if you leak stuff, you don't belong at Apple. That's a strong statement. You're one of the biggest companies on the planet. You are the richest company on the planet.
I mean, he ain't lying.
Is one thing to get a digital copy of your employee handbook and then to just email that from your Apple email address to some reporter. But you can't really mean that when you have a all company type meeting and somebody's going to call their friend who happens to be a reporter after this. I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on this? I mean, this was something that you wouldn't necessarily hear coming out of Apple. At least I didn't think you would hear something like this coming out of Apple. It's like, if you leak, you just don't need to be here.
Well, not directly, right? My issue with this is it seems like Tim Cook has really taken a dislike to his own Apple employees that leak just memos about all hands meetings or, you know, company emails regarding whatever the case may be. In this case, you know, he had an all hands on meeting where he was talking about COVID. Whether or not they're going to let people whether or not Apple is going to force people to require, to get COVID vaccinations in order to come back to the office. They were kind of like, we're encouraging, strongly encouraging, but they stopped at actually making it a requirement. He also talked about the, Apple versus Epic case. So all of that got leaked, right? So back to my original point was, I find it odd that Tim Cook has now decides he wants to go scorched earth on Apple employees who are leaking company emails when that same fire is not there when actual Apple products get leaked by supply chain, by manufacturers, all of the leaks that kind of came down the pike, you know, when Apple, every time they announce an announcement or release a new product during an announcement, all that stuff kind of gets leaked. We may not get everything right. We may not get, you know, whatever the case may be, but some stuff gets leaked. And you've heard stories about Apple cracking down on product leakers, but it sounds odd that he's really like, okay, that stuff, we're going after that. But this stuff right here, we really don't like this. And I kind of find it odd that keep that same energy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say is when Apple is actually products are getting leaked, renders are getting leaked, specs are getting leaked, but not them talking about whether or not they're going to require COVID.
Well, I don't necessarily think product leaks hurt the company. You know, I think for Apple in particular, I think product leaks just get folks more hype for product releases, you know, and oh man, this is going to be, you know what I mean? Like Mac Rumors is a whole forum for that type of thing. So, you know, they probably, I think they go hard on, counterfeit devices and you know, entities that are trying to put out fake Apple products, but just design leaks, that's a case of all press is good press. Right. And, you know, you're keeping Apple's name in your mouth, talking about them and getting people hyped for whatever is to come. It always seems like there's something slightly different from what got leaked, that gets released anyway. So, you know, I think that's a game that they like to play to keep folks on the hook. I think once you start talking about actual company business, like you putting our business in the street for real, you know, talking outside the family, then that's a little bit different situation. And I think a lot of that information does need to stay within the confines of the company.
Yeah, it was just when I initially read it, and clearly they wrote the headline to make it very clickbaity. It worked.
Absolutely.
But I was like, you know, leaking stuff out of Apple is kind of Apple's thing. I mean, this is, as you were saying, Terrence, this is not something that they don't regularly do or allow to happen and actually relish in it. You know, it helps them when it's product related stuff. about stuff that's actually coming out, you know, right before it comes out, because it creates the buzz. There's something new coming. I need to check, you know, let me go check to see if I can get that new phone. When is the new date going to come out? All these leaks help that. So, as you said, keep that same energy when it comes to people talking about how they feel about working for your company. So, Stephanie, you had a story that you had posted here about what Facebook is doing with Instagram. So why don't you tell us about that?
Instagram had been developing, well, Facebook via Instagram had been developing an Instagram Kids platform for a while now that was supposed to not feature any ads. It was supposed to be directly targeted at young people 13 and younger, who aren't supposed to be on the Instagram platform at all anyway, because their minimum age is 13. And it was supposed to have a lot more parental controls that would be automatically enabled, so the parents can kind of control who can follow their kids, who they can DM, who they can message, what type of stuff they are privy to in their feed and different things like that. But there were a ton of different groups and organizations. 44 different Congress people spoke up, the Center for Humane Technology, Common Sense Media, which is a really great resource for parents. A lot of people spoke up about the idea that you do not need to create yet another way to get people addicted to social media, basically, because, you know, quite honestly, I don't see anything else changing. I mean, you know, for all the listeners out there, I this is sort of a story near and dear to my heart, because I have a workshop called Till Death Do You Tweet that teaches good digital citizenship. And I see this over and over and over with the young people that I speak to. They don't need another platform. They don't, you know, and I'm not saying that we need to get rid of social media altogether. But I don't think we need another platform per se. I think the platforms we have need to work better. And I think we need to do a better job of educating parents on how to manage their kids' social media, because that, I think, is the even bigger problem, because I talk to parents as well. And they literally are like, we don't know what they're doing with those phones. They take the phones in their room and we don't know how to use them. And we're so behind and we're intimidated and we don't know what are we supposed to do. And at the end of the day, you have to be a parent, but you also have to get tech savvy enough to help your kid manage these platforms. So just giving the kids a separate platform, I don't think is going to make that much of a difference, because the predators will just follow them there. And when they put their, you know, age in there, they'll say they're 12, because that's what they're doing now, you know, and you look at what's happening with YouTube Kids and the fact that there is more porn on YouTube Kids platform than there probably is on the regular YouTube platform. So it's just like having a whole separate entity doesn't do anything but, you know, try to make the platform look like they're doing something when they're really not. It's really a matter of the tools and the utilities that are already on the platform that exists, and a campaign. I think, you know, the platforms are responsible for educating the parents as well, to help the parents understand how to use all of these things that are happening. But the point, I think I just sort of buried the lead completely. Instagram has decided to pause Instagram Kids for now while they work with different organizations and entities to figure out how to make it, you know, so that it won't be so addicting and whatever. But I'm just like, I just don't believe there's a way to do that. Right. And I think that they need to focus on the stuff that they already have.
Right. And you made a good point earlier, you know, the kids are just going to find a way around these parental controls anyway. You know, I'm reading from the story. One of the people says the reality is that kids are already online, and we believe that developing age appropriate experiences designed specifically for them is far better for parents than where we are today. Not if the kids can figure out how to get around it and unlock all the stuff they want to see in the first place, which goes back to your original point. We already have enough platforms. Yeah. We don't need to indoctrinate these kids.
7 year olds, younger, you know, right, 6 year old with Instagram accounts and stuff like that. It's like, what is the point of that? And you know, it's not necessary.
Yeah. I find myself sitting here thinking, when I first read this story, and you're going to create an Instagram for kids under 13. So how did that meeting go? Someone at Facebook says, you know what would be really cool? If we could start building those ad profiles on kids younger than 13. We can get them when they're 7. That's just 6 more years of information that we get.
And that's the thing. It's not like they're not going to collect that information.
So
they're just not going to use it to target them right now.
Right. So
wait until they turn, you know, 12 years old and 364 days. You know what I mean? They got the finger on the button. So it's just,
I know. I literally played this whole conversation out because somebody probably said, well, these are kids under 13. You really can't do that advertising there. Earth will erupt. Okay. Let's not do ads on them. Let's just get them really addicted to Instagram so that when they do turn 13, then they'll start using it and we can start building that profile from there. I'm saying that facetiously, but not really. It's like, what is the purpose of this? Facebook does nothing that does not benefit Facebook.
That's right.
No company. Right. You know, that's not true. There are companies that do things that are truly goodwill type companies. Facebook doesn't do things that does not benefit Facebook. So we're going to go spend millions potentially of dollars to create this platform
for space.
This safe space because we're just good corporate citizens and we want these children to be safe.
Right.
No, what is the ulterior motive?
I credit that report that got leaked, that recent report that came out that mm-hmm. Facebook knew how Instagram mm-hmm. was addictive mm-hmm. and how it was damaging the self-esteem of young girls, but they downplayed it. I think that had a lot to do with why they're putting this on hold right now. So, you know, hey, whoever out there leaking stuff, keep leaking because we need to see this. And it's funny, I watched the Adam Mosseri, the CEO of Instagram, put a video on Instagram today talking about why they decided to put it on hold. And he sounded very earnest and very, you know, astute and very
forthright,
conciliatory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of that mm-hmm. good stuff. And I was like, man, come on. Y'all just waiting for the heat to die down before y'all try to come back with some stuff.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, even from the kid standpoint, I don't want my child posting pictures on Instagram when they're, you know, like 7, 8 years old.
10 years old.
I do not want them. If there's one thing.
I barely do it now with my kids.
Yeah, I'm just
and you
thinking.
Should be mindful of that because you're creating that digital footprint for them now, you know, not necessarily with their consent. And that's going to follow them around. So you got parents. I said something about that a couple weeks ago about the school pictures and, you know, but that's again where parents need to be better educated on these tools. And we're not getting that. We're definitely not getting that.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So before we get to our main story, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but Google, Google has exposed their Karens. So let me
Google
just tell the story.
Show they ass again.
Yes. So basically, there is a black employee at Google. His name is Angel Onoha. He's an employee. This dude works for Google. He's riding his bike around campus. He has a badge. He is on campus at the place that he works. Someone who we don't know who the someone is, but someone said, we don't think this person works here. So security gets him. They look at his badge, has his name on it, has his information, but I don't know, they may have had some kind of issue with their badging system. And they decided that we're going to take your badge. You need to leave after holding him for 30 minutes, trying to figure out who he was. And if you have any questions, just contact security. And we're going to let them handle it. And I'm just like, Google, come on now.
There's not a day that ends in, what do they call it? There's not a day that ends in day that right. we wouldn't be able to talk about a story like this. Like, honestly, it just, it's so frustrating and exhausting.
And I don't know if this is true or not, but I saw this story maybe a week or so ago, and I saw other people join in or, you know, dogpile on Google, actual employees at Google. And again, I don't know if this is true or not, but it was so funny. This guy said he worked security at Google and he was on lunch in one of the public cafeterias having lunch during his lunch break. He gets a call on his walkie. he gets a call on his walkie-talkie, and one of his supervisors or somebody said, "Hey, you know what? We'll call him Al." Right? There's a suspicious guy on the second floor lunch, break lunch. You know, once you get off, can you go ahead and investigate this? And he said, "I spent an hour walking around looking for myself because he was a suspicious person that somebody called."
crazy. And the thing I noticed in the story that we looked at on Yahoo, the quote that they gave, now the brother said he was riding his bike and somebody called the popo on him and they took his ID and everything. But Google's statement says, "We learned that the employee was having issues with his badge due to an administrative error and contacted the reception team for help," the spokesperson said. "After they were unable to resolve the issue, the security team was called to look into and help resolve the issue." Like, that don't sound nothing like what that brother's actual experience was, mm-hmm. you know, in this whole situation. And the spin just made me mad. It just really pissed me off, because that was nothing but spin. Google know they did wrong and they need to just apologize before this brother sue them and do better.
Oh, his job security is tight for a while. that we know. But, it, you know, once again, this time I did not get into the comments because I know where they're going to go. So I'm just imagining
there are some comments.
Well, what is the big deal? They ultimately got it figured out. And it's just like, why has it always got to be figured out with black and brown folks?
Right. Because it never has to be figured out with white folks.
And it's, I'm just, you know, like I said, I don't know. They haven't put the full postmortem of what went down. But my man is on the campus with a badge that says he's supposed to be on the campus, and that wasn't good enough.
It wasn't enough. And it should have been enough. And we never get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. This badge looks legit. Well, you know what? Let's go check and make sure that the name in the system is legit, but we're still not sure.
It's freaking Google. How hard would it have been to verify that within seconds? If you felt like you had to do that.
Isn't this what Google does? I mean, you would think
they couldn't just search for the brother?
It's like
Googling.
Right, I'm just saying, Google, take a picture of him, put him on Google Lens and see if he comes up. I would imagine that they can do that at Google.
They absolutely could have done that. They just chose not to. And that's the problem.
So like I said, I did not want to harp on this story. But
there ain't a day that ends in day.
When egregious stuff happens. And for those who are thinking, well, I don't see what the big deal is. The big deal is that we don't ever hear about this with our fair complected brothers and sisters out there.
Well, and then because they don't have to deal with it, they don't understand the trauma that it brings. This is not just a minor inconvenience.
Mistaken identity, and the brother missed his bus because
he had to wait. It's not just a minor inconvenience. This causes actual psychological trauma that can manifest itself in physical sickness, in mental illness, and in all kind of different stuff, because it gets perpetrated over and over and over again. You know what I mean? Like, this little "what's the big deal" type thing has huge consequences down the line. It's a huge ripple effect that you don't see if you're not experiencing it.
Yeah, and just the process you have to go through just to convince somebody you are somebody.
And it didn't work. It's like, we don't think you're supposed to be here. Show us your papers. We show you the papers. Here's my photo ID with my name on it. Here's my actual ID that matches up to that.
Still yeah, ain't good enough.
That's not good enough. Let's go look in the system. In the system, here's your name. I don't know if that's good enough. Here's what we're going to do. You hand us this badge and you get to step in. And if you got any questions about what we just did, you call security in the morning.
Right.
After you miss your bus to get back to the crib.
And it's not just, you know, traumatic for him. That's triggering for me to read. Because now I'm wondering, dang, what if I go to Google next week, you know, step on a, like, or anywhere. It's just every Black person feels a kind of way when they hear a story like this. And that internalized trauma is real, and it has very negative and detrimental effects on our health.
And just in general, like you said, Stephanie, you know, I wasn't affected directly, but guess what I don't do when I leave the house? You better believe I don't leave my wallet.
Right.
You better believe if I go walking around my own neighborhood with my own wife, you better believe I stuff my driver's license in my pocket. I shouldn't have to think that way. But stories like this reinforce that, okay, I need to make sure I know or I can prove that I am a person.
At some point,
we're going to do a show where we will focus on diversity in the workplace. Just to give you a snit tip of that. This is a Harvard educated bruh that just had this happen to him. He probably knows other Black and brown folk who might be right for Google. What do you think the chances are he is now going to say, hey, you know what? You should look at Google as a career. You know, you only might get hemmed up your first couple weeks there.
10 out of 10 would not recommend.
But it's just like, these companies have to do better. So I said, we're not going to hark on that. We're going to go ahead and move on because this main story, Stephanie, that you have, I want to let you introduce it. But yeah, this is a big one that, because you guys live in ridiculously large cities. I live in a large city that everybody drives. So I don't see the issues of what you're going to talk about here shortly. But go ahead and tell us what our main story we're going to really get into, here next.
Right. So New York recently passed a few different bills to protect the dignity of gig workers and specifically food delivery workers like Grubhub drivers, DoorDash, Seamless, Uber Eats. Yeah, all of that. Because the conditions that they were working in could not be described as anything less than inhumane. I mean, the restaurants they were delivering for wouldn't even let them use the bathrooms when they came in. And I'm doing y'all a solid. You know what I'm saying? And just and the idea that I saw in researching, I looked at a Twitter, somebody tweeted a video of a guy during last week's 2 weeks ago, Hurricane Ida blew through, flooded everywhere on the East Coast. And there was still a guy delivering food in waist deep water, pushing his bike. And it's just like, that's not noble. You know what I mean? We should, first of all, we as people who order delivery should not be ordering delivery when there's a flood going on outside. Have some kind of humanity, but that's not noble to force people to work in those type of conditions. So, you know, I just wanted to talk about the idea of how delivery workers, gig workers in particular, are treated in this country, because they are mostly, you know, especially when you come talk about food delivery, overwhelmingly Black and brown. And, you know, we need to do better to make sure that their rights are protected.
So,
no, absolutely.
Go ahead, James.
No, I was just going to say absolutely, because, you know, we, like Stephanie mentioned, you know, we take them for granted. You know, we assume that when we put an order on our phone in an app that somebody's coming when me in return, I am, for example, I'm concerned about me going to a restaurant because of this COVID going around. So let me be careful and stay in the house for my family and stay close contact. But let me get on this phone and have somebody.
Somebody else risk their life.
Right. To bring me some pizza. Right. So, you know, we take them for granted. And the fact that some of these stories that are getting published, these stories that some of these gig workers are telling, it doesn't equate to the respect that they should be getting for going out and doing these things. Now we see it as, again, we see it as minor. Oh, it's just somebody working on their spare time,
right,
or somebody part-time, or somebody trying to save up for a vacation. No, that is not the case. These are people out here who cannot get a job any other way and have resorted to taking these jobs because that is the way that they pay their bills. And we're not treating them that way. We're treating them as, oh, this is something that some college kid on the side trying to make some extra money for spring break. When in reality, there are people out there who are making a living out of this, and we should treat them as such.
And supporting their family. In New York City, there are over 80,000 food delivery workers. 42% said they experienced being underpaid or not paid at all. 75% say they use their own money for medical care. 54% reported being robbed, and 30% said they were assaulted during the robbery. So, I mean, you are taking, even if this is just your side hustle to make a couple dollars to flex in Cancun, you are literally risking your life to bring somebody, you know, a hoagie, you know, or whatever. And there needs to be protections in place for that kind of thing.
So, like I said, the big city aspect of this that I'd never really thought about was the fact that a lot of these folks are getting jacked. What you said, 54% have been robbed, 30% have been assaulted.
Yes.
That's almost a third. That's over half. Yes. And it's almost a third that have been assaulted. And as I started reading a couple of Twitter stories, a big thing right now is trying to get a delivery person that's going to cross a bridge where they've got to go somewhere far from home, and you jack them. You basically get their e-bike, you get the cash that they have on them, and then you're rolling with an e-bike and the cash that they had on them. And this is like a regular thing there. This is, people are delivering, you know, this food at their own peril in many instances. So I do see both sides of it, because there are, I know folks who do, who are the college student who are doing this just to have some extra cash. You know, they do this on the weekend. I do know that there are some folks that are like that, but they are the few. The many are the ones who are doing this to support themselves and to support their family, to where it is an 8, 10, 12 hour a day job where all you are doing is picking food up and dropping off. So the first thing that really stood out to me is that you're just not a good person when the person that is coming to deliver the food to generate business for your establishment, you don't even let them use the facilities to relieve themselves after they have, you know, been delivering food for you all day. That needs to get, do you have to make a law for that? Yeah, we have to make a law for that.
We have to pass a law to let them use the bathroom.
So there's that. But the other part of it is like, you know, are they employees? Are they contractors? I would imagine that some of them really want to be a contractor and want to be treated as such. But I imagine that others, well, the only reason I'm doing this as a contractor is because it's the only way that I can do it. I would love to have some benefits. I would love to have a day off and actually get paid for it. I would love to be able to go vote and not have to call off, you know, or to, you know, literally log out of an app and not make money when that happens. I would love to be able to go to a doctor's appointment. I would love to be able to go to a PTA meet. I would love to be able to do all these things that you do get with, if you have a good enough job to have some benefits with it. So
it's tough because the labor secretary, our current labor secretary, has been pushing for that. But these companies have enough money to kind of squash it, because Uber did that when their drivers wanted to be classified as employees. And it was actually on California's ballot at one point. And Uber just threw a bag of money at the problem in marketing and PR and convincing people that that was not the way to go. And it was defeated. So, you know, these companies got deep pockets, and they're maybe buying some politicians. They're definitely, you know, swaying public opinion with their power. And so it's going to be a tough call to get to a point where they are classified as employees, but some of them are unionizing now. So we're going to see a lot more of unions being built, being created and organized around gig workers.
And again, like I said, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and also in just researching, this story, some other articles kind of came up, particularly with Amazon, and Amazon is using AI on their delivery drivers that is supposedly supposed to make them safer. But they are like, I don't want to get dinged for turning on my turning signal, so I'm just going to merge over without doing it. It's like, what? And it's, AI.
Insane.
Can be crazy sometimes.
And then did you see the report? There was also a recent report, and it was on the guy's video camera captured it. It was a guy that worked for Amazon. He was like an executive that was getting a package delivered to his home. And the driver, I guess there's a rule that you're not allowed to walk across people's grass when you deliver packages for Amazon, but the driver did. And I think his justification was like, so I could hurry up, because if I have to go all the way down, the walkway and then get to his walkway, and that takes time, and time is money when you're an Amazon driver. Volume is key. And the guy, when I tell you, ripped him a new one, cursed him out, called him the N-word. I don't know where you get the N-word from, because the boy walked across the grass, but I think that guy has been relieved of duty at Amazon, the executive. But again, it just goes to show the draconian rules that these gig workers and these delivery people have to live under, that just really prevent them from being able to do their jobs.
Yeah. Do I take the ding to walk across the yard, or do I take the ding and use the sidewalk? I'll get more steps in, but it's going to take me longer to get there because
15 seconds this longer
is, it's
now I don't meet my quota for deliveries for the day because I had to stay on the sidewalk. Now my bonus is affected, my pay is affected, it's a domino effect that happens.
But I'm looking at this article and I'm like, some of the things they get dinged for: using turn signals. If you turn, so you
get
dinged,
but then you get a ticket for not signaling before you
turn. Isn't it the law that you're supposed to use a turn signal or at least a hand signal? So what are you supposed to do, Amazon? Stick your arm out the door and let people know you're about to stop, turn left or right?
You can't win.
But
then there's also the AI thing that we've been talking about since we started this podcast, with the fact that they're looking at faces and trying to see who looks drowsy and who doesn't look drowsy based on their eye, how open their eyes are or whatever they're using, but that fails and can be misinterpreted for people of color. And it's just, Amazon, do better. That's pretty much going to be my slogan. I'm going to get a t-shirt and say, do better.
But yeah,
everybody just needs to do better.
Using turn signals, looking at your rear view mirror. I'm like, yeah, I thought these were the things that you're supposed to do.
God forbid you drive safely. It's insane. So, it's absolutely insane. Amazon, and again, it just speaks to, it's a lot of us out there doing this work. And, there are things that just need to change. And when you're not experiencing it, when it doesn't affect you directly, you just want your Prime package delivered in 24 hours, like they said it would, you don't tend to look at these issues as closely.
Right. And that goes to my question: is how do we put the genie back into the bottle when it comes to this? Because, not taking, taking personal responsibility, I am an Amazon user, and it is a plus that when I order something in a day or two at the latest, it's at my door. And then, to my original point, I feel like I am protecting myself and my family because I have these abilities to be able to deliver
privilege,
something.
Call it what it
privilege.
Is.
Yes. Yes. That's the word I'm looking for. Privilege to have this stuff delivered. And I'm like, all right, well, the more stuff I order, the more work I'm giving to delivery drivers, So it's like, it's this weird, where's the middle? The middle between providing a product or providing a demand and making sure at the same time there are precautions, there are safety, making sure, all these workers are protected, make sure they have benefits. I don't care what you say, whether they're contractors or employees or whatever the case may be, these people should have benefits.
They should be
able to do all of this work. And then if an ailment happens for them or their family, they should be able to go to their urgent care or go to their doctor or go to the emergency room and rest assured that how am I going to pay for this is the last thing on their mind. I need to take better care of myself, take better care of my family, not how I'm going to pay for this. Mm-hmm. When you've been working 12, 16 hours straight, sitting in a car, sedentary, right. You know, driving around, tearing up your health.
Not able to go to the bathroom there either, because I've heard plenty of reports about Amazon employees that keep, you know, jugs and jars and bottles in their car, in their trucks, so that they can relieve themselves in the truck and not have to, you know, waste time on that. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to see these organizations get unionized. It's probably going to result in more costs passed on to the consumer, but that's a price I would be willing to pay.
Right.
It really is.
Yeah, you especially asked about after hearing these stories.
Yeah, you asked about
I'm a tip more.
You asked about the genie. You know, how do we put the genie back in the bottle? We don't. We're never going to go back to the way it was. These delivery, the food delivery folks in New York, they were having issues well before COVID.
Yeah.
COVID just exacerbated it. And in some ways actually gave them some relief. I mean, there were, for independent contractors, there were specific, you know, programs that are pretty much being ended state by state at this point, to give them some relief. That's going away. So, you know, we may get back to how we were pre-COVID, to where these issues were already bad. It's like, I really need to, be able to not have my bike stolen from me. I really need to be able to use the facility somewhere on my route. Those kind of things, they really do need to be addressed. And I don't know. It's going to take somebody smarter than me to figure this out, because, as I said, I do understand the business side of it. I don't necessarily agree 100% with the business side of it, but I do understand it. It's like, well, the reason we're using contractors is because it's less expensive for us, and we can ultimately, you know, bolster our bottom line. I get why they are doing what they are doing. So I don't, you know, happy middle ground doesn't exist. We need to figure something out that is going to have these workers out there with some protections.
I think the federal government can start with not killing PUA. I mean, that pandemic unemployment assistance was key for millions of people across the country that couldn't work and couldn't do gig work because of this. So I think that needs to be a permanent fixture of unemployment compensation. And then, you know, obviously our healthcare system is trash. So that needs an overhaul anyway, and needs to have some protections and some allowances included for gig workers, the same as everybody else.
So I think that this, we have talked about this. We're not going to solve anything in this show, but we kind of wanted to just bring up the plight of delivery drivers, delivery riders.
Tip your delivery drivers.
Tip them. Oh, wow. I do got to say this. Some systems don't even allow you to give them a tip.
Wow.
So
slide them $5.
Particularly, you know, I hardly use cash anymore. But I do keep it on hand so that if I do have somebody deliver something to the house, I can physically give them currency as compared to putting it through the system where they may have to share it with, you know, someone who had nothing to do with getting it delivered or not getting it all. We've heard of owners doing that. So yeah, tip your delivery people, be nice to them.
One of the things we started doing was, especially around the holidays, you know, Halloween on, we put out the gift baskets with all the snacks.
Oh,
and
look
all
at
the,
y'all yeah. like those people I see on TikTok with the little
with
the water bottles and the granola bars waiting for the drivers and whatnot.
Right. But we don't look do that just to be on TikTok, because that's a whole nother thing. It's like, be kind for the sake of being kind and not trying to, you know, go viral.
True.
So that's about the time that we have for episode 3. But before we close the show out, we need to talk about all the patrons who have started supporting the show. So I think last week was the first time we did a read. We had a bunch more. So I'm going to go ahead and read out some names of some new patrons who are supporting us on Patreon. So let's start with Henry Kim, Andrew Marshall, Tyson Parker, Josh Grisdale, The Daily Tech News Show, Kilowatt, Reagan, The Letter S, Daniel Hoffman, and Chris Ferguson. Want to give all of you a shout out and thank you so much for supporting the show. And
appreciate y'all.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate y'all. Something that is out there now. We are going to call this, Stephanie had a great name, the Founding 50. So the first 50 of our patrons who support our show on Patreon, whatever your commitment level is, you will get the podcast. You know, you can listen to an RSS feed directly from Patreon that will not have any ads in it. So that is for the first 50, the founding 50. And then we're going to actually set up tiers so that anyone who does not make that first 50, if you'd like to support the show, we'll have tiers for you. One of those tiers will actually be a RSS feed where you will be able to listen to the show. But I do want to say for all of the folks who are out there supporting us right now, there will eventually be if you're in that first 50, whatever your level is, whatever ducats you decide to send our way, that is going to get you a ad-free stream, or I should say ad-free RSS, that you'll be able to listen to the show without having to hear our pre-roll, mid-roll, and end-of-show type ad. So once again, we want to thank all of our patrons. I think we're up to 17 at this point. And I was not expecting it to jump off that quickly. I mean, we had folks before we even said we were going to actually do the show for real every week that, where's your Patreon? You know, so this is all new to us. But we definitely want to give all y'all a shout out and say thank you for supporting the show. So with that, as always, I want to give each of y'all the opportunity to tell folks how they can hit you up and get to you online.
I am all around the web at Tech Life Steph, and you can check out my website at tilldeathdotweet.com.
And I am Terrence Gaines, also known as Brother Tech Everywhere on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, I guess. In addition to that, me and my homegirl, Nika Monfort, we do have our own podcast called The Snob OS Show, where we talk all things Apple and then some stuff.
And I am at Rob Dunwood at all things. I'm on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, at Rob Dunwood. And you can also check me out at my other show, smrpodcast.com. So with that, folks, till next week.
Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.